This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and from Jerry Lane Chevrolet. Emails to talk@talklouisiana.org, and our phone number is 877-217-5757. Robin Dow is producing podcasts available day and night at wrkf.org and at talklouisiana.org. And we're with my favorite reporter in America, Dan Muldea, the intrepid man about town in the Beltway, where, as far as American politics goes, it's the center of the universe. But as we know, right now, there are many investigations against the former president, Donald John Trump, who won Louisiana twice by 400,000 votes, and Jeff Landry, who is supported by the former president in Landry's quest to become governor of Louisiana, has filed a friend of the court brief with the Texas Attorney General. They're questioning the legal fight over documents that were seized from Mar-a-Lago from the former president, some of which were classified. The attorneys general argue that the Biden administration's position in the case should be viewed with jaundiced eyes because of the administration's handling of a wide range of issues that have been challenged in court. They cite policies and litigation surrounding immigration, drilling, and eviction moratorium and vaccine mandates, among other things, and argue the Biden administration has not acted in good faith. Now, Dan Muldea, I'm sure many are saying this is the pot calling the kettle black, but what are your thoughts about where this is going?
It's amazing, Jim, and good morning to you. It's always a pleasure talking to you. It's amazing that Donald Trump has completely, totally hijacked the body politic of America once again. You know, I was just talking to your associate before we went on, and I said that it wouldn't surprise me to hear that Donald Trump was a space alien who was sent to Earth to destroy the planet, because it is unbelievable the damage that this guy does because of people who continue to follow him, people who run for office now, people who are election deniers who are running for office, who are in positions possibly to win. And it's unbelievable that we have these six investigations of Donald Trump going on right now, and I don't think anyone is in total high confidence that these things are going to end with Donald Trump being held accountable for all the damage that he's done to this country as a result of his lies, his theft, and his potentially his treason.
Well, he did a nice job on the vaccines, didn't he?
Yes, that was the guy who told Bob Woodward on tape on February 7, 2020, that he didn't want to cause a panic by telling people how bad that the virus was, that in fact it was airborne. Yeah, that was that guy. Yeah.
Well, his crowning achievement, I think, was pushing for the vaccine, and it came right after he left office, and instead of taking credit for it, as we know, he doesn't even mention it at these rallies, but these rallies are getting weirder and weirder because Trump is attracting a fringe element. And of course, Democratic candidates in the past have also attracted fringe elements. But anytime people start snapping what looks like the Hitler salute, I think it gives people pause.
Right. It's that QAnon, what is that, one-finger QAnon thing?
Yeah.
That can be masked as a Hitler, Heil Hitler salute. It's frightening, and it's horrible, and there's people out there who believe this, and there are people who have to be deprogrammed like Moonies. Whatever he does, they forgive. Things that they will not forgive any other politician. They have these conflicting standards of private behavior for public officials, one for Donald Trump and another for everybody else. He is completely given an exemption in public politics, but the fear is that because of the judges that he's appointed to these various federal courts, whether it's the district courts or the courts of appeal, not to mention the Supreme Court, that he's going to be treated differently in the judiciary as well.
A listener notes, and we've discussed this on our show, perhaps in previous iterations with you, Dan, but the Republican Party in a decade, in 2012, 10 years ago, the nominees for president and vice president were Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan. Right. Now, never has there been a more telegenic ticket than those two. But on the other side, these were reasonable politicians, people
who today could not win a primary.
No, they could not. They could not. I wonder if Romney can win again in Utah. It would seem that Donald Trump would like for him to be defeated a lot. But 10 years sure. ago. And another thing people forget is that a few days before the election, that one was a dead heat. Now, Obama pulled away and won by 5 million votes, but that was a good ticket, and it did not win. And is that what precipitated the rise of Trump?
I think it's what precipitated the rise of the Tea Party, and the Tea Party, its ultimate embodiment, I think, in the end was Donald Trump and the sheep who follow him. Mm-hmm. I think that was the beginning of that. I think it was because you had a black president, 2008. It was the Tea Party that probably was responsible for the shellacking that the Democrats took in, what was it, 2010?
Yes.
And you know, I think all of that goes back to the Tea Party and Mitch McConnell saying that he didn't want to give Obama any victories at all, that they were going to oppose him on every at every turn. And Mitch McConnell, mm-hmm. you know, has done a lot to hurt this country as well with his blind support of Donald Trump. Recently, there's this new book that just came out that's coming out today, I think, by those two women reporters at the Washington Post, were saying that McConnell was almost going to go with impeachment as a result of January 6th, the second impeachment. And he was prepared to do so, but he punked down in the end and decided to support the president, even though he can't stand him and refuses to speak to him. But it's all about politics, mm-hmm. and it's all about winning.
Well, he lives in one of the SEC states. He represents Kentucky, which among the 11 SEC states, which are in love with Donald Trump, among those—
I've never heard that term used before. That's good. Is that yours?
Yeah,
that's
mine. That's mine.
That's good.
But Kentucky gave Trump a bigger percentage of votes than any of the other 10 SEC states. So— Mitch McConnell is a political animal like no other, and I think he thought maybe the tide was going against Trump after the insurrection of January 6, 2021, and he found out differently, and of course he pivoted. But a listener notes, and I think this is a good point for those of us in Louisiana, that really the blueprint for Trump's rise was from a guy named David Duke, who ran in Louisiana twice in 1990 and 91 and got 60% of the white vote. And he was a former Klansman, and people put that aside. And one election almost unseated a three-term U.S. senator in J. Bennett Johnston. It was 1990, and our producer Robin Dow has pulled up this spot that may have saved Johnston's career and kept Louisiana from electing Senator David Ernest Duke. Here was Bennett Johnston exactly 32 years ago with a spot that was extremely damaging to David Duke.
I was strident and often intolerant in my youth.
His youth. That's how David Duke dismisses his past as a Nazi sympathizer, as a Klansman. But David Duke led the Ku Klux Klan as an adult.
There is no more truly representative symbol of the white race than the fiery cross. It is our symbol, white victory.
Still burning crosses in the night, still snapping the Hitler salute, not just as a teenager, not just in his 20s. As late as last year, when Duke was 39, here's what happened if you dialed the New Orleans number for the Ku Klux Klan.
David Duke's office.
David Duke is lying about his past. Don't trust him with our future.
And yet he still got 60% of the white vote in that race against Bennett Johnston. But you're laughing, and I'm sure you're laughing at the irony of this.
It's horrible. It's horrible. And I think Donald Trump is much the same way. I think that the base, his sheep-like base, I think is based on his white nationalism. I think this is all about racism. Bottom line, it's all about race. And I think that's the reason why Trump continues to hold on to this, this remarkable support that he has, because people are listening and resonated with the racist message that he's sending out to the country and to the world.
Well, there are six separate investigations, and if I were Donald Trump, I would wake up and think, my God, where do I go from here? But every day there's a new development, and another name is resurfaced. E. Jean Carroll, the writer, says she will sue former President Trump under New York law for sexual assault and wants his deposition. This is from an alleged assault in a department store many moons ago. And Donald Trump said he never knew her, but of course there were photographs showing the two together and blah, blah, blah. But the beat goes on for Donald John Trump. We'll talk about this and more, and a tragic death of an investigative reporter in Las Vegas. Back with Dan in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757. Dan Moldea, the investigative reporter whose body of work is immense and rivals any reporter in American history on various topics. He has covered the gamut, as they say, and he is here to talk about the world at large and the investigative reporting fraternity and sorority. If you, there are some women who do it too. It's not that large, because generally people don't get rich doing this kind of thing, and they put themselves in danger, and it's not everybody's cup of tea. But there's some brave souls like this guy in Las Vegas, Jeff Gehrman, a reporter for the Las Vegas Review-Journal, who put his butt on the line time and time again covering the mob, and he ultimately was stabbed to death outside his home on September 3rd, 18 days ago, and the person who is suspected of killing him was an official he was investigating. And Dan, I know you knew this guy.
Oh yeah, yeah. He was a good man. We weren't real close, but we were certainly colleagues. You know, we talked many times. I was on his. He had a podcast called Mobbed Up, which I appeared on a few times. And he was a very fine person. He was a dedicated reporter, a very much respected guy. Jeff Gehrman is going to be missed. He was a legend out in Las Vegas, along with another reporter named John L. Smith.
And he did put his life on the line many times, and it would have been certainly not a surprise if there was a mob hit. But apparently, some little punk with a low level job got his boxers in a wad over something Jeff Gehrman had written about him, and he's accused of going to his house under disguise and killing the man.
Right. I'm sure that he's going to say that the situation escalated, that he went there in disguise. He was disguised. There was this disguise where he was wearing an orange, sort of an orange vest with this wide brim hat. And there was a burglar ring that was running around Las Vegas dressed very much the same way. And he may have been trying to portray himself as being part of that burglary ring in an effort to throw off course any police investigation that would follow. He approached Jeff at his home outside his garage, and there was an encounter. Words were exchanged. There was a fight. Robert Tellis, this creep who killed Jeff, pulled out a knife and stabbed Jeff multiple times and killed him. And I would view this as premeditated. The prosecutors are deciding right now whether to seek the death penalty for this murderer.
Well, in your career, you have taken on the mob. You took on the NFL. You took on O.J. Simpson. You've gone into Hollywood and unearthed the unpleasant things about the industry that permeates Los Angeles.
Oh, the NFL, NFL, right. the National Rifle Association, the Ken Starr, God rest his soul. I've gone after the right wing, the left wing. I've gone after murderers, assassins, knuckle draggers, not to mention the legal and illegal gambling communities and a variety of mob guys and assassins. I mean, it's been a hell of a, but this is what we sign up to do. It's what we do. And it's what Jeff decided to do. Jeff was on a, in a day-to-day thing. Jeff was a newspaper reporter. I'm more of a book writer. And so I have time to stretch things out a little bit and do some diplomacy and do some spade work in order to keep myself safe. Jeff was had a daily deadline. He was with the Las Vegas Review-Journal, and he was out there with a daily deadline. So he had done a four-part series on this guy, and he had busted him for his bad behavior in the workplace, that he was having an affair with somebody, which apparently had jeopardized his marriage, and this guy had lost an election. So Jeff was very much on the front lines there, and he was living in Las Vegas, mm-hmm. where all the people he was investigating were right there with him. Jeff was really at risk. I give myself a little cushion. Jeff was right in the line of fire.
But you have had your share of threats.
I've had my fair share. I've had my fair share.
Including a bounty at one point, correct?
This was not from the – I've never had trouble with the mafia. If you have trouble with the mafia, you're gone. Forget about it. I've had problems with thugs. There was a Teamster Goon Squad that targeted me, and they put a $1,500 contract out on me. And I was more upset by the low price than I was by the, you know, mortified by the, oh, my God, there's a contract out of me. My reaction was $1,500, that's it. But I was only 26 at the time. I'd not published any of my 10 books, and I was just a kid at the time.
Dan Moldea, who's a licensed investigator and a big man, and I think most people would not want to tangle with you physically. Your size is impressive, but as you know, if somebody's got a gun, you're at a disadvantage. And if the mob really wanted to get you, they could do it. Mike,
would Hoffa say, "Charge a gun, run from a knife"? Is that what he said?
That's what he said.
I think I'd run from either one.
Well,
the truth.
Mike,
and I'm 72. I'm 72 now, so I'm hardly, I'm hardly tough anymore.
Well, but Dan's about 6'5", and in his day, he was in great shape. But he still, I wouldn't want to tangle with him. Mike in Villa Del Rey. Mike, good morning.
Good morning, Dan. I wish your books were on audio.
Hoffa Wars is, and my book on the NFL and the mob is. Both of those are on video.
Audio.
Right.
You have
can't
to do Amazon, right?
Okay. Right. Well, those are two very good ones. And my favorite is Confessions of a Guerrilla Writer. And he goes into detail about his investigations in Louisiana with David Vitter and Bob Livingston. And he changed the course of Louisiana history by virtue of his reporting. I don't think there's any doubt. Now, some, of course, believe we lost an opportunity when Bob Livingston did not become Speaker of the House, but he would have been Speaker of the U.S. House and David Vitter would have been governor if not for the reporting by the guy we're talking with right now, Dan Moldea. Dan downtown. Dan, you're on with the other Dan.
Yes. Tell me, has the National Rifle Association changed from a group focused on gun safety the one simply promoting the profits of gun manufacturers?
That's a rhetorical question, I would say. Yes, I would say I would say you're exactly right. I remember when I was a Boy Scout, when I was like 12 years old, and we go to summer camp, Boy Scout summer camp, Camp Manitowoc in Akron, Ohio, Summit County, Ohio. And it was the NRA who was there teaching us how to use firearms safely. And we would get our badges, our marksman badges, our patches that would be provided by the National Rifle Association. What you're saying is exactly right, Dan. It has changed considerably over the years. It's become a very political organization, and in my mind, a very corrupt organization.
All right, Steve downtown asked about something that I think is a good question, mentioning Trump's affinity in the SEC. Well, there is a thread of Trumpism in your home state of Ohio, which was considered a swing state. What's going on in Ohio?
I was there last week. I was there last week doing a speech before an organization that supports first responders, police officers and firefighters. And it's once again, it's remarkable how much support, this J.D. Vance guy who hated Trump when Trump was running for office, he was trashing Trump and calling him a Nazi and everything else. And now he's drunk the Kool-Aid, and now he's in Donald Trump's hip pocket. The guy who J.D. Vance is running against, Tim Ryan, I don't know him, and he defeated a friend of mine, Tom Sawyer, who was our congressman way back when. But Tim Ryan's done a good job, and he's from Youngstown, Ohio, or in that area, and he deserves this. He deserves to be a United States Senator. I think Tim's going to pull this out in the end. But J.D. Vance, once again, has drunk the Kool-Aid, as so many others have done, and have pledged their loyalty to Donald Trump, which is inexplicable to me.
Well, speaking of the SEC, as we noted yesterday, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution poll now finds Herschel Walker two points in front of Raphael Warnock. And Herschel Walker, as we know, is a guy who's had some difficulty expressing himself when he doesn't carry a football. But he did win the Heisman Trophy for Georgia, and that may trump everything. Pun intended. Back after this. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. A few more minutes with Dan Moldea, the great reporter. And great is a word often overused, but in his case, it applies to his body of work of 5 decades now, and many of those years in Washington, D.C. I know you remember the day you moved there, don't you?
Excuse me, Jim?
Moved to Washington?
January 6, 1976. Yes, January 6.
So when the insurrection occurred, it was the 45th anniversary of Dan's arrival in the Beltway. Now, a listener notes that you, this person knows a little bit about you, had an association with one Edward Grady Parton from Baton Rouge.
Yes, I considered Ed to be a good friend. Ed Parton was the government informant who flipped and turned state's evidence against Jimmy Hoffa. He's one of Hoffa's closest confidants, and during Hoffa's jury tampering trial, during his extortion case, the test lead case in Nashville, Ed Parton witnessed Hoffa attempting to fix the jury. He then became he was furious with Hoffa because Hoffa wanted to kill Bobby Kennedy and his entire family. And Parton, who had a large family of his own, was furious about it. He decided to flip and turn state's evidence. He went to my mentor, Walter Sheridan, who was head of the Get Hoffa Squad in Bobby Kennedy's Justice Department, and he did the right thing. He stood up, he testified, and it was Ed Parton's testimony that sent Jimmy Hoffa to jail. And then there were all kinds of attempts to try to get Ed to recant his testimony. He was offered over $1 million cash to do the job, and he refused to do it. Ed is a controversial guy right there in Baton Rouge. Very controversial guy, no doubt about it. God rest his soul. But he was a great source for me, and Walter Sheridan introduced me to him, and God bless Ed Parton. To me, Ed Parton is a hero.
Ed Parton, a name that we don't often hear, but at one time was a huge player in Baton Rouge, and of course had great association with LSU football back in the day. But another acquaintance of yours, and it's relevant with the death of one Ken Starr, is a guy named Brett Kavanaugh.
When I was doing my book on Vince Foster's suicide, and it was a suicide, I had to deal with the Office of the Independent Counsel, Starr's office. And I was dealing with two of Starr's lieutenants, and they told me, if you want information, they said, who's your publisher? And I'd been given a $100,000 contract by a publisher called Regnery, which is a right-wing publisher. And they said, we just want to know what happened to Vince Foster, whether he was murdered or whether he committed suicide. And I said, he committed suicide. And so when I contacted Starr's office to try to get some information about Foster, they said, oh, if you want information, the guy we introduce you to is Brett Kavanaugh. So Brett Kavanaugh and I had lunch at the Old Ebbett Grill in Washington, and I have filed an affidavit about what was going on. Brett Kavanaugh was the official leaker for Ken Starr's office during the Clinton impeachment drama.
And supposedly justices are above politics, but as we found out with Clarence Thomas and his wife, that's not the case at all times.
Right, exactly right. I got to ask you, Jim, this the SEC analogy, that's yours? You invented that.
That's
right?
Me. That's me.
I think that's wonderful. I think that's I'm going to use that. I'm going to use that, and I will source it to my friend Jim Ingster down in Baton Rouge.
Well, there have been two elections for president with Donald Trump as the Republican nominee and in the SEC in the 11 states.
I love that.
He's won 21 out of 22 elections. He's 21-1. And of his electoral votes, he's gotten 538, and his opponents, Clinton and Biden, got 538. In the SEC, Trump got 96% of the electoral votes available in the SEC in two elections, and he only got 33% of the remaining votes. So he has benefited immensely, and the states are large, Florida and Texas and Georgia. It's to the point
right.
where... more than half of his electoral votes have come from the Southeastern Conference.
Well, listen, I understand your next guest is Loretta Swit. Is that true?
That's the plan. Now,
I want to ask her if Frank Burns, with whom she had that television affair, was the first MAGA member, because he was a sniveling guy. He was always lying about everything. He was a coward, you know. And you know, to me, he was probably one of the early Trump supporters, even before Trump was on our radar screen.
Well, I've spoken to not the other day we had on Nicholas Lemon from New York, Columbia. Dean
School
of Journalism.
Yeah.
And he said he can't find a person in New York City who voted for Trump. And he was serious. And in Louisiana, we know, based on the fact that we have a huge black population, which votes overwhelmingly Democratic, that about 85% of the white people in our state voted for Donald Trump twice. Now, some of these people are friends and associates of mine, and they're not bad people. And I don't think every Trumper is a QAnon person, but he does have this ability to attract right-wing extremists. And I think a case can be made, Dan, that he hasn't done everything he could to dissuade that support.
I think you're right, Jim. But I love this SEC thing. Kudos, my friend. I'm going to use it.
Well,
this is a perfect description of Trump supporters.
Well, that the SEC is his base, and notably, he moved from New York to Florida, an SEC state, and Florida has swung from a purple state to one that is now it's not fiery red, but it's redder than it used to be. But, Dan, it is always a pleasure with you. Anytime I get a compliment from Dan Moldea, it makes my day. So
I love this. The SEC. Going. I'm going to use this. Jim Ingster.
All right. Well, thank you, my friend. Love you. Take care. See you soon.
Thank you. Thanks, Jim.
Take care. And now we are joined by the incomparable Loretta Swit. Many of us watched her for a decade on MASH, and it was 50 years ago this September that this iconic television show premiered Sunday nights on CBS, and of course, what a great run it was with a show that has certainly stood the test of time. The finale on February 28, 1983 was a most watched show in television history until Drew Brees and the Saints won the Super Bowl in 2010. But even today, people watch MASH, some every day, and they see Loretta Swit, who was better known then as Hot Lips Houlihan. She won two Emmys for her performance in MASH. And good morning, Loretta Swit.
Well, good morning to you. You and you are late.
Well, okay. We were having some challenges, but it was our bad, and we got you now. So
yeah,
we're only...
It was definitely your bad.
Well, and I apologize.
But, no. What was funny was I looked at the time, which is 8:25, that I was supposed to wake up and give you an interview. And I said to my PR man, Harlan.
Yes, the great Harlan Bowl.
Oh, Lord. I've got to make sure my total brain is present that hour, you know. And he laughed. He said, yeah, you'll be great.
Well, so we gave you a few more minutes to get ready. I love it.
A few more minutes? Do you know what time it is here?
Yeah.
We're going on 11.
No, well, actually, it was, you know what, when we changed time zones, we're not an hour late. We're just a few minutes late. When we change time zones,
no.
That happens.
No. You were supposed to call me Eastern Standard Time.
But if I'd called you an hour ago, Loretta, we wouldn't have been on the air. But that's as I say, it's something happened, and it's probably my fault. So, but I got you now. I got you now. Let's get past this. You've gotten a lot of attention. You've gotten a lot of attention about the 50th anniversary, and for good reason. And you were really the sole female character of note in MASH, and you did it well. And I'm sure some might say you were typecast, but it's not bad to be typecast as Hot Lips Houlihan, is it?
I don't know about that. I don't think Shirley Valentine or Mame were remotely like Margaret Houlihan, but that's okay. And if you were going to be typecast as a character, I think Margaret was an amazing head nurse. She was a great character, and it would be okay if that's how I'm typecast. You know what I mean?
Well, you had a great cast with you, and do you stay in touch? Some of them, of course, have passed on, but have you stayed in touch with them?
Oh, it's quite a world knowledge that we're family. That was the whole. I think that's what kept. The public, too. I think they regard us as family. There's a global MASH family out there, people who grew up with these characters, with these people, you know, and we are family.
And Alan Alda was a veteran actor, an acclaimed actor, and you were, of course, an acclaimed actress when this happened, but could you have imagined the success and the staying power of MASH at the time when it debuted in 1972?
I don't think anybody could have foreseen the incredible success and fame of the show. Not in your wildest dreams, and you do dream wild when you're an actor. You're hoping for success with enough quality and respect to it. That's, you know, it's enough thing. There's one thing to have a long run, but if it's something you can be proud of, you know, I don't think anybody could have imagined would have that kind of success.
And it debuted on a Sunday night. You know, obviously some shows have done very well on Sunday nights, but at the time, I don't know that even though the Robert Altman film had been successful, that people had any idea that this show was going to have the staying power. And as we know, it became more popular through the years and ultimately going right to the top of the Nielsen ratings. And we're about to go to a break, but we'll be back. We've got some people waiting to talk with the incomparable Loretta Swit, one of the great actresses in television history. We're back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, and we are privileged to have on the phone Loretta Swit, the great actress who won two Emmys as Margaret Hot Lips Houlihan in MASH. The show premiered 50 years ago this September, and it ran through February 28th, 1983, and what a run and what a legacy this show has. Many consider it one of the top, if not the top, sitcom in the history of the medium. And when it all started, who knew? But who knew? Who knew? 877-217-5757. You infuse enthusiasm, and I'm glad you embrace the legacy. As we know, some actors, and I've talked to some of them, they don't remember the days that well from their prime years, but you loved it. No doubt about it, and still do.
It was a very special show. I mean, it was all of us will tell you the best time of our lives. I mean, there's nothing like it. So very easy to remember those dates or that time, you know.
Well, Last episode, as I mentioned, February 28, 1983, Alan Alda is quoted as saying, Loretta and I were in a car on a way to a restaurant to celebrate with the rest of the cast, and we realized with a jolt that the streets were empty, almost no cars, and then it hit us that people were home watching the last episode of MASH.
It's true. It's a true story. It was like, where is everybody? And we realized where they were, and it was a great compliment.
877-217-5757. David in Atlanta. David, you're on with Loretta Swift. Good morning.
Good morning. Miss Swift, by far my favorite episode of MASH was the April Fool episode. And when Colonel Daniel William Webster in the operating room addressed you and said, I don't need advice from a woman, and you had a very severe reaction to that, of course. Now, did you know the whole thing was a prank and a gag? I mean, did you have an idea how the script would end, that the whole thing was nothing more than an April Fool's joke? Or did you think that was a serious part of the script?
No. We know the script going in. There are no surprises, although I think that's a cute idea. But obviously we have the script and we know what it's supposed to be.
877-217-5757. Arnie in Jones Creek. Arnie, you're on with Loretta Swift.
Yes, good morning. Good morning. I just want to say I loved your portrayal. My sister and my mother were nurses, and the portrayal was dead on. But also, I also bought the series. I work offshore, so it's my comfort food for when I'm bored offshore. I always watch the series. But Larry Linville, in real life, I understand that he was actually nothing like his character.
No, that's right. He was just an excellent actor to pull it off. It was not an easy task because Frank, I mean, his nicknames alone tell you that he was a strange character. But Larry pulled it off. He was great.
He was, of course, tied to you and Frank Burns.
Say again.
Well, the Frank Burns character was one that meshed well with Hot Lips.
Not for very long, but that was a part of, I think, the evolution. It was a wonderful, funny joke that the writers had difficulty letting go of when they find a good thing, you know. But I think that it had to continue to grow, and she had to continue to evolve. In a way, a very demeaning relationship for her. And as they wrote her more and more intelligent, more ambitious, more efficient, and so forth, it had to continue to grow. And, mm-hmm. and in our case, end, deteriorate. It was not. When I would go on tour, let's say everybody, I would do an interviews or whatever. Why are you still with that guy? Well, Ferret Face or Chinless Wonder or whatever terrible nicknames he had. And there was no justification for it to continue except for comedy. And you can't keep doing the same joke.
The show ran September 17, 1972, February 28, 1983, and that's 256 episodes, 11 years. Were you in every episode, Loretta?
No, especially initially. It was, I think maybe, I don't know, let's say it's 22 episodes of a season. Maybe I was in 19 or 18, or
actually,
we were searching for her character. You know, we were looking for mm-hmm. who she was. But it was, and then eventually it was all 22. But I don't know about how many
Actually, there are 256, and I just pulled it up. You're listed as being in 239 of them.
Second
only to Alan Alda, who was in every episode. So he only missed 17 episodes in 11 years. That's rather intense. Now, this show, it brought attention to a war in which many who fought in that war didn't get their justified due, the Korean War. And a listener asked where it was filmed. I think I know. It was, you did your taping in Malibu, didn't you?
Our physical set was on Stage 9 at 20th Century Fox. The exteriors were in Mulholland, on Mulholland Drive at the Fox Ranch.
Okay. Chris and Amit. Chris, you are on with Loretta Swit. Good morning.
Hi, good morning,
Chris. Good morning. How are you doing?
Chris?
I'm good.
I love the show and the comedy, but there were some very serious moments on the show as well. What was your favorite?
Indeed. My favorite show out of all 256, it's a toughie, you know. It's like if you had 8 children, who's your favorite? How do you do that? You know, you love them all. There was something wonderful in every one of those episodes, whether it was a scene or a look or a joke or it was just wonderful work. I'd have to say my most favorites were the ones in which Margaret Houlihan developed and showed herself, revealed her gentle nature and her caring nature, rather than just barking orders as the Iron Major, you know. I loved the episodes that were written to reveal her real self, and the nurses, for example, comes to mind when I actually tell them how hurt I am that they don't treat me like one of their own. And that's a very touching and meaningful episode for me and my character.
Barry in Mid-City.
I think Comrades in Arms is also a favorite of mine. It showed that Alan and I, the characters, were antagonistic and always fighting. But it showed the underneath, the respect, the caring, the friendship that was also as real as their antagonism, you know. So things like that, things that surprised you. Birthday Girls with Jamie Farr, who ran around in dresses trying to get out of the army. And here we have this guy driving me to the airport. And it's my birthday, which he doesn't know. And then when he finds out, has a very touching, lovely scene with me, trying to make me feel better on my birthday, that I'm going to miss going to Tokyo for R&R and have my birthday parties. He brings me a little cupcake with a candle in it. You know, it's a lovely, lovely experience. And so I think my most favorite episodes are where you see all different sides of those interesting characters, like Klinger, seeing that soft side of Klinger.
We're short, very short, but Barry, I want to slide you in. Barry in Mid-City, please be brief.
The rehearsals for the show, Miss Loretta, how did the rehearsals go?
We rehearsed on Mondays, and for an actor, I think it's one of the most exciting times where ideas were flying around the room, suggestions, and would read the script and immediately start to act.
Okay, unfortunately, we got a roll, but Loretta Swit is one of the best, and it's an honor to speak with her on 50th anniversary of MASH on television. Signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and Jerry Lane Chevrolet. Stay safe and stay tuned.